Today's guest is Tom Watson. Tom Watson is the current mayor of Owensboro, Kentucky, and former president and co-owner of Tom Watson's Prosthetic and Orthotics Incorporated. Tom Watson served his first term from 2005 to 2008 and was then reelected in 2016 and 2020, now seeking a fourth term. Watson is a lifelong resident of the community and a prominent political leader.
Welcome to Inside the Political Mind, a special series of contemporary insanity. In this segment, we interview political figures on the origins of their beliefs, their hopes for a better America, and their relentless pursuit of truth, told firsthand by your leaders. Politics are filled with insanity. Now is the time to find stability.
Welcome back. So today we have a very special guest, Mayor of Owensboro, Mr. Tom Watson. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
We're doing fantastic.
I'm good.
So we appreciate you coming on, and I say we just jump right in. So
jump in.
That's right. Mayor Watson, would you like to just briefly talk about yourself just for a little bit? I know not many people love doing that, but...
Well, I'm 73 years old, married 47 years, I think, 46. I got seven grandkids, two sons, and I've been a resident of Owensboro my whole life, except when I was off at multiple universities. I ran a prosthetic and orthotic company for 50 years, built artificial limbs and braces and that kind of stuff, and actually was able to fit a veteran with limb loss from World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and Iraq and Afghanistan. So kind of proud of those years, and retired a couple of years ago, sold my practice, and now I just got this little part-time gig of playing mayor. That's all I have to do now.
Well, that's awesome. John, would you like to start us off?
What got you into wanting to be mayor? Like, what drove you?
You know, it was kind of funny. There was five or six of us sitting around BW Wings one night, and we weren't real excited about the candidates, and we just went around the table, and everybody had an excuse, and it got to me, and I said, I'll do it. And that's about how much I thought about it, and went home, told my wife. We were planning a week off a month for a whole year, and she just folded up the calendar and said, let's go. And so that was back in 2004. So I was mayor 4 years, 5, 6, 7, and 8. And then a thing came out called Obamacare, which we were afraid was going to really hurt our ability to take care of people. And until we went to, I was a lobbyist for my trade association, so we went to Washington and said, you know, you got to include us in the reimbursement schedule because there's a lot of vets and a lot of folks that need our help. And so we got in, and so for the next 8 years, somebody else was mayor, and my claim to fame down there is always taking a deficit and turning it into a surplus, because every time I've gone in, I've been in debt, and just like this time, $17.5 million over 5 years. So we got ourselves out of debt, and I left them with a nice bankroll and got out for 8 years. And then somebody said, hey, we need you back in there. We need to work on this these money problems. And so
right.
I talked to my wife, and I said, you know, why not? So I'm in my second term, finishing my second term of my second run at being mayor. And you can only serve three consecutive terms by statute. So if I get reelected, I'll have four more years, and then I'll have to get out. So I'll be 77, 78 years old. And I'm a firm believer we need generational change in leadership in all communities, and both across the country and in D.C. So I'm hoping I can wrangle in three or four young folks in the 2 years from now. If I win, there will be another. The commissioners get elected every 2 years, the mayor every 4 years. So I'll have a chance to try and wrangle in some young folks and see if we can get a generational change, because, you know, it's definitely time. Our whole community needs that. I think it's the only way you can keep your community vibrant is with young ideas. They're not always right, but they have ideas, you know, and they're not afraid to get out on the edge of the cliff and say, I'm going to do this. You know, and some people don't want to get our age. We've fallen off that cliff before. So we just are a little more timid. And so that's hopefully if I win, we've got a slate of candidates already signed up for this time, because they'll be running along with me. And then 2 years from then, they'll have to run again. And so hopefully I can encourage some minorities, some females. We are a pretty white community. We have about 8%, you know, a population of color, and but our female population is about 52%. And so we need to have better representation. And we actually have two ladies on our commission right now, so that's good. And so I want to keep encouraging young people to do things. I'm hell-bent on it, let's put it that way. I think we need young people involved in the decision-making process of what makes your government work.
Yeah. And we see that even at the congressional level. That's, you know, concern, you know, where are the young people? Why are, and one of the questions is, why are young people not wanting to have these positions, granted that they can even, you know, have that ability? So when you first got into office in 2004 and you served until 2008, and then once you were reelected in 2016, what was the biggest difference you saw in our community between those 8 years from the time you were first mayor and then when you got back into office in 2016?
Well, you got to realize that government employees are a pretty stable group as a group. So nothing really changed a lot about staff-wise. We did have a change, and Owensboro has a city manager form of government, which the city manager operates, takes care of operations, and the elected officials do policy. And there's a straight line on the fourth floor where he didn't come to my side and I don't go to his side, as a general rule. We had a city manager 30 years younger than me, so that was a new mindset for myself. But those are the things that happen when you don't anticipate them. You know, you just think, well, I'm going to run and I'm going to try and do my best. But then you've got to be able to manage all the different personalities, all the different mindsets, all the different age groups that are inputting into your zone, so to speak, what they would like to see happen. So that was it was a little difficult at first, but you know, when you've done it, you know you try. I always have a list of pros and cons. You know, things I did wrong, things I did right. You know, and I keep those by my side so I can see what improvement can I make there, and I bet I don't step in that hole again. So those are some ways that I try and manage it.
So you know, you now you're working, you know, you mentioned you work with people who are, you know, much younger than you. What have you heard from other people in our community that is, what is most important to them, but also what is most important for you? And like, what needs to happen in our community in order to strengthen it?
Well, as an elected official, your number one priority is public safety, by far, no matter where you're elected. So we want to make sure that our police, our fire, and our public works guys have all the tools they need. We're building a new police academy where the old one was. It was falling down. We have money in the budget. We've got a new fire training facility going up on at the same time. And so we'll be able to have a burn house in it and have ways for the firemen and women to learn their trade. And give public works, which is, I claim them as the third leg of public safety, because, you know, when the roads are messed up and you got to change directions and you got to fix potholes and you got to, you know, take care of curbs and gutters, pick up the sanitation stuff. So it's just a matter of kind of blending all that together and see what their needs are. And they work hard. I have no complaints at all down there as far as our folks that work at city, that work for the city.
So you talked about getting Owensboro back on a financial strong foot.
Mm-hmm.
What were the biggest problems that we had in a city like this financially?
Well, it's just like your own checking account. When you spend more than you have coming in, you're going to get in debt.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of things were done. Before I left, Senator McConnell called me and said, I've got $50 million I want to get to give you for the starting of the waterfront. Now, some other people may take credit for that, but this is the accurate truth. And it comes out in five increments. The transportation budget is not all given at one time, so each year you have a fifth of it. Well, when I got the estimates, I'd already had a plan going with a group out of Texas who we had an Owensboro connection with, mm-hmm. to help plan it. And we didn't have enough money to even break ground. But we had a plan. So the communities that got part of that transportation money was Ashland, Louisville, Bowling Green, Owensboro, Henderson, and Paducah. So I called all of them, said, since we're the only one with a plan, can I have your first year money and you can have my my fourth and fifth year money. And since you don't have a plan, and some of them haven't started it yet. So that worked out really well. We were able to get about $28 million started. So we got that done, and we had to go through Frankfurt. And that's what's the other thing about being an elected official. You need to have built relationships with Frankfurt, Washington, Indianapolis, Evansville. And I've been fortunate enough to be able to do that and have people that I can call on and say, okay, I need your help in Ashland. Can you get them to do this? Or, you know, how about Paducah? Talk to Robbie Rudolph, and he's big down there in Mayfield. So that's a big part of having being an elected official in a community this size, is being able to rely on relationships that you've built over the years. And there's a bill comes up, and I can call President Stivers of the Senate, in the Senate in Kentucky, or I can talk to Suzanne Miles, she's caucus chair, and I say, look, you know, that bill's not really what we want. Can you annexation's a perfect example where the Kentucky Association of Counties decided that they didn't want any more annexations. They want to put a 10-year moratorium on it. Well, your communities can't grow if you can't annex property outside your city limits. So it was a big deal. We got that bill killed, and it's still hard to do annexations, but at the same time, you know, that's the only way your community can grow. Our community is like 19 square miles inside the city limits. And if you look at it, we have the river to the north, can't go further north. You got you've got business and communities, and you know, with out to the east, going towards Hancock County, with all that stuff, Gulf Stream's done out there. To the south, you get past Sam's, you got floodplain. So we have to do something to try and create some land for growth, and hopefully we'll be able to do that when a company comes to town and says, you know, I want to build a factory here or some kind of business, and I need land for 200 employees. Kind of what we did when we got Big Rivers to come over from Henderson. You know, they were in Henderson, they were in an old building, and their city wasn't too excited about doing anything for them. And I happened to coach the CEO of Kenner G's son in Pop Warner football 30 years ago. And I said, Bob, can I get you to come to Orangeburg? He says, yeah, make me a deal. I can't refuse. So we gave him. Had the land, put them in there, and it's probably going to create about $10 million worth of revenue over the years from that spot. So that's what you do. It's a part-time job, makes about $35,000 a year, but at the same time, you need to have somebody. You're not trying to make history like some folks, or you're not trying to get back in so you can spend money. And then walk away and let somebody else figure it out. So that's kind of my philosophy, you know, leave it better than I found it, and for the next bunch.
And we talk about economic development and bringing industry to our area because, in my opinion, and I think a lot of people will agree, that's vital. You know, you need industry because that provides jobs, and then it provides, you know, jobs on top of that, just, you know, teachers, restaurants, things like that.
Yeah, the favorite saying is you never stay the same. You either get better or you get worse. So that's why you have to have progress.
So with that, I mean, what's been your biggest accomplishment as mayor?
You know, I don't think of it in those terms, I don't guess, you know.
Yeah.
I think of it as a team. We've got four commissioners. We've got city manager. And I've got... You know, we got all those employees, and I just think of it as a team concept, just like all the years of coaching I did. And I couldn't put my finger on one thing. Once that's accomplished, I just move on to something else. A visible thing is getting Big Rivers downtown and create another corporate citizen, and it has large salaries for the employees. We brought in about 65, I think, employees. Please, that we're living in Newburgh, now they come to Orangeburg instead of Henderson. I think probably that's one thing that I can say that was probably a pretty big accomplishment. And getting the Gold Star Monument downtown, go along with the Shelton Memorial, that was a big deal. It took me 3 weeks to raise all that money to get all that done because it was close to everybody's heart. And we brought down a guy named Woody Williams. He's a Medal of Honor recipient in World War II, landed at Iwo Jima and took out three pillboxes by himself. So
wow.
He was, anyway, about 5'3" and weighed about 135 pounds, you know. Marines didn't even want him. You know, but he just kept going back. And that's the Greatest Generation by far, the second generation was the World War II folks. Because they came back and rebuilt America.
Yeah, they were part of a great generation. You speak on football. Personally, I actually played on KFL. So that's,
oh, did you?
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, you helped found it, or you're one of the founding members.
Yeah, we are having some issues with the one out at our park, and several parents came and said, you know, could you help us get started with another league that doesn't have bounties on each other's team and things such as that. And I said, I'd be happy to. So put together a few folks and we sat down in my living room and said, we're going to do this. And you well know, you know, we're not going to give awards for it. You're going to go to school, going to tie it in with your homeroom teachers, going to make sure you do the right things. And if you don't participate, you don't get to play. And that was a big thing with me. That's the way I wanted it to go, and it seemed to work out. I don't know how it's doing now. I haven't been out there in a long time. So I don't know. I guess it's still going, I guess.
We always practice over out by the airport,
mm-hmm.
and so I still see that, you know, cars pulled out and parked out over there and, you know, and throwing the football around. So
yeah, because, you know, I always believed coaching for 25 years, baseball and football, from Pop Warner to Wesleyan, and I believed you need to teach the children about life and a little bit about the sport on the way. Because there's so many things in sports that you can learn that will help you in life. Discipline, responsibility, respect, all those things come from playing sports, I think.
Yeah, definitely. What was your biggest challenge that you faced as mayor?
I would say probably retiring the debt. I actually had to raise our occupational license fee a little bit from 1.33 to 1.58. And it doesn't sound like much, but it's about $400,000 a year in tax revenue. And I didn't want to do it. I'm very conservative, fiscally conservative, but there was no alternative. And so we raised that. That's one thing I regret. And actually, I tried to go back to 1.33, and it amounted to $15.95 a pay period on somebody making $150,000 a year. So it really wasn't good public policy to do that. So, but doing that was very disappointing, but we had to do something.
We, as political science students, oftentimes we study, you know, government in all its forms. And one of the things we always go back to is the importance of civil participation and, you know, carrying out your civic duties. Can you speak to why being active in local politics is so important, and why, if you believe this, why local politics and local government is so important and vital to not just our community, but all communities across America?
Well, you know, water runs downhill, Washington to Frankfort to local communities. And you have to have somebody there that understands that process. You can't always stop something that's going to happen in D.C. or in Frankfort. And to have local communities that have people that are interested. And one thing I think is valuable, it's a nonpartisan commission. You know, there's no R's, there's no D's, there's no I's, which I think is helpful in the decision-making process. When you get too political, you'll end up fighting. And there's plenty of things on YouTube showing commissions arguing, and every one of them are partisan commissions. And 2 years ago, Damon Thayer, he was the leader of the Senate and floor leader, and he called me up. He says, you know, we're thinking about passing a bill to make school boards and all community elected officials being partisan and nonpartisan. I said, Damon, we go back a long way together, but I'm going to have to fight you on that one. I don't think that's the right thing to do. And then I called a few other people, and I think it was just more to try and get the school boards to not be way one way or the other than it was really the elected officials. So it did make it out of the hopper, so to speak. So I'm glad of that. I think it's it's just freer to do what you need to do. Like tonight we have a Republican, Davis County Republican picnic or dinner tonight, and it's going to be all R. I mean, everything's going to be R. And I'm an R, but, you know, I don't close my mind to people that can think as well. And we have a lady coming in from Lexington who's our – I'm on the Republican Executive Committee of Kentucky, the RPK. And I was appointed by Congressman Guthrie 6 years ago maybe. And we nominated this lady to go to be our representative in Washington, and now we've got another one. And so I like to keep my finger in the pie a little bit, just kind of as somebody's stirring it. I don't want to get it cut off, but you know, I like to keep my finger in there. And over the years, they've realized, I think, you know, that I'm logical and not a wacko, and they rely on me for different things, and I rely on them. I always have to go in there and preach. I said, there is something west of Elizabethtown, and it's western Kentucky. I mean, because, you know, they just kind of cut, they got a line in the sand there.
Well, you have this, you know, Kentucky is unique because you have this golden triangle where it's, you know, northern Kentucky, Lexington, and Louisville. And oftentimes, you know, people in eastern Kentucky or western Kentucky feel like they don't really have anybody representing them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I always thought that was interesting. And, like, you know, party politics, you know, it starts to get messy and people start to lose sight of, you know, what's really important, because oftentimes they just get caught up in social issues and nothing ever really gets done.
And one thing that's happened in the Commonwealth, the libertarians had no voice. So a lot of them changed their registration and became Republicans. And they've pretty much gotten involved in all the local politics, and sometimes that's caused a problem. What do you think about that? Are you smiling about it?
I'm a libertarian. Registered as a Republican.
Did you? Okay. Well, I mean, and I understand that, you know, and it's like these people that are leaving California and they're going to Texas and Tennessee, they say, we're glad to have you, but leave your politics in California. You know, it's the same principle.
He's an Army brat, so he's been all over.
Oh, okay.
He's just bringing his wacky ideas.
Sometimes they're wacky, but they may feel sometimes that the other side's kind of wacky. So, but there's this hat, the Republican Party needs to be a big circle of folks that have like ideas that can come together to create momentum to do the right thing.
And now it's gotten weird because I've been doing an internship at the Capitol this semester.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, as you know, there's a Republican supermajority. So now they've created
House and Senate.
Right, yeah. So now there's been like separate factions of Republicans who have, you know, that are fighting for control within their own party. So, you know, party politics are one thing, but they just always get messy, it seems.
Well, Republicans know how to win elections, but a lot of times they don't know how to lead. You know, you got your conservative, your moderates, and your independent Republicans. And they're broken down in federal and state and local, if you have a party in a local thing. And just Republicans are, they're just not very forward thinking sometimes. You know, it's my way or the highway, and it bothers me because I think there's value in everybody's ideas, and whether or not you have to agree 100%, you know, you can pick something out of the sheet and say, yeah, this is pretty good, you know, and I ain't doing that, and I ain't doing that. But, you know, you have to have an open mind, and, you know, because we've now taken over the lead in the Commonwealth of registered Republicans over Democrats, which is unheard of. I mean, you all are too. Can you name the last Republican governor we had?
Matt Bevin.
That's it. And the one, there's been four.
Before that, it was, do you know?
I don't.
Yeah, there haven't been very many.
Because it was Steve Beshear before Matt Bevin, who is Andy Beshear's dad.
Yeah.
Which that always can, you know, I can understand it because of, you know, like we were talking about that trio of cities, but it's just, it's interesting how we have a Republican supermajority, but a Democratic governor.
Teachers union.
That's right.
They're the ones that really elect the governor. They're so powerful, not only because of their size, but all the tentacles, their relatives, and all the things that go along with a family. And we've talked about that multiple times at RNC, and we've all come to the conclusion that's it, you know. And they're my son spent 27 years teaching, you know, so I have some insight on that. I got a daughter-in-law that's still teaching at Palo, and so, you know, they paid them so poorly for so many years that, you know, they really haven't done a lot, no matter who was they were backing, to really, you know, propel them forward. And you know, like Illinois and Ohio and Tennessee, you know, they're considerably larger paying their public school system. And I think that's what brought out choice. And it's brought out, you know. Yeah.
Your opinion on that? Like, because there's a constitutional amendment that's going to be on the ballot that's going to allow tax dollars to go to charter schools.
Stivers, yeah. Constitutional amendment, yeah. In fact,
what's your opinion on that? Or how do you think it would affect our city?
Well, you know, I coached at Owensboro Catholic for 10 or 12 years. My boys went to Owensboro Catholic, and I think there's some value to the discipline and that you derive from a private school that you can't really get in a public school a lot of times. But again, it's just a matter of who's the leaders, who's leading the school, you know, and they'll set the standard. And when I was coaching there, we had three nuns and three priests, and, you know, and it was kind of, you know, everybody kind of moves in a straight direction. But, you know, it's difficult now. The school choice thing, I don't have a problem. I think the bill says you want to put whatever the stipend is for someone to go to the public school, to be able to transfer that to the school choice folks and let them put it in there.
Yeah. And that was the main concern, is even though it is a choice, you know, should tax dollars go to private schools? And that's essentially the main argument.
I don't have an answer for that. You know, if you're getting good education, probably not. But if you're in a real deprived area, you take the West End of Louisville. You know, what better way of helping some of those folks that are in poverty, basically, and put them on a bus and get them to a school where they might achieve a little bit better? I think each individual area probably needs to have their own opinion of that, which never will happen. But it's difficult, you know, to take public dollars and, you know, when people think teachers have not paid enough.
Or when you see like a public school struggling, like, you know, in Western Louisville.
Yeah, it's
we don't really have that problem. I mean, all of our public schools are great.
Yeah, we're very fortunate. We've had good leadership. And I tell people all the time, I may have said this already once, you know, we're too big to be little and too little to be big, which makes us just right. We can get by with things that a big place can't do because we're so close-knit. And we can do more than a small place because we got a little bit of pop. And I believe that. I mean, we're just positioned just right. We have, and sometimes, you know, when you get in some of these situations, they don't have the same clout, I guess, to, so to speak, to get things done.
No.
So, you talked about the teachers' unions. Do you think there's any way for Republicans to sway them to support Republicans instead of supporting Democrats?
I don't know. That's above my pay grade, I believe. Cause I think it's a tough call. Because you got a lot of second generation teachers, you know, and you know, like I said, the tentacles go out in their family, and I'm not really sure. Other than when I was growing up in high school and registered to vote, my dad said, you need to go down and register as a Democrat or there won't be anybody else on the ballot for you to vote for. And it was pretty much true. And so you go down and register. And when I had that medical practice, we actually had governor was Brereton Jones, who put a provider tax on you. If you were willing to take a Medicaid patient and lower pay, you still had to pay back to Frankfurt 2% of that. And that ran a lot of people out and decided to not go down that road. So I don't know. We have more registered Republicans and Democrats in Kentucky, and it's definitely a red state now, up and down the thing with the guy with the orange hair. You know, he's big in Kentucky, and it's definitely an R state now. With 35 out of the 37 senators or 33, they're all R's.
It's like
some number.
Out of the 38 senators, I think, like 28 or 29 of them are Republicans.
Yeah, and, you know, and 87 out of 100 in the House, I think, are Republicans.
Yeah.
So it's definitely gone that way, and it went that way for a reason, I'm sure. They'd gotten off the track with the D's, and the R's pulled them back in, saw the mistakes that were made. Now these guys are going to make some mistakes, and, you know, they'll probably pull them off the track again.
That's in the pendulum the other way.
Mm-hmm. It's always moving.
That's what makes politics so interesting.
Yeah, I guess so. But it also, sometimes people don't want to get involved in it, or they don't want to pay attention to it because they think they're all nothing but liars, and, you know, they'll say anything to get elected and that kind of stuff. So it's gotten harder, I think, you know, to sway people to get in the game. You know, my wife was absolutely, she didn't care one bit or nothing. Now she's yelling at the television more than I do. She's seen what can happen when the things don't go a certain way, and a lot of times, you know, a visual lesson is better than a written lesson.
That's right. So you served, or you, I guess you currently still serve on the foundation board for the Owensboro Community and Technical mm-hmm. College. Owensboro is unique because we have four colleges. You know, we have Owensboro Community and Technical College, Westland, Brescia, and then we have a extension of Western Kentucky University.
WKUO.
How vital are these institutions to our community? And or is there anything that you would like to see maybe change, or what are you proud of with our institutions?
Well, when we instituted the on-to-college thing at high school level, Brett Guthrie and I, we went to Virginia Beach, Virginia, and they had started that idea, and I was on the foundation board then. And I had kids and grandkids in, you know, in school. And giving them the opportunity to get 2 years of their college out of the way, so to speak, because nobody knows. I'm saying nobody, but very few people know what they want to do the first year they go to college, much less the second, unless you're going in the trades. And by having them get all the math and the freshman English and all that stuff taken care of, it focused them on what they might want to do later. But we did run into a little unforeseen problem. One of my granddaughters graduated from Brescia. Community College. She went on to college there at Davis County. And then she graduates from Western. She's 20 years old. Yeah. And I had a hard time finding a company that would hire a 20-year-old kid. Yeah. They think, well, you're a freak, or, you know, there's something.
You don't have enough life experience.
That's right, or, you know. Exactly. And as it turned out, she's done fine. She's doing well, but that was an unforced, you know, problem that we didn't. But we didn't have too many of them. But I think the on-to-college thing, one of the things I'm proud of, because I think, especially in the trades, it opened up. You know, a young man or young woman that wanted to learn to weld, you know, but they didn't care about math and English and all that stuff. It gave them a chance to get a little broader education. There's a great example in town here. His name's Mike Horn, and he sold his company out. It's called Gray Wolf now. It's out on the bypass, and for a big nut, big check, and he started out with a pickup truck that was borrowed and a welder that was borrowed. And now he's very well off because it can be done. And so I'm a big believer in the trades, always have been. And I think that's where when I first got on that board, Jeff Carpenter was my closest friend. He was board chair. He asked me to get on it. And after the first meeting, all they talked about was, you know, nothing had to do with the trades. So I just asked a question. I said, what does technical college mean? I said, you know, you got your social work and your all the other things that go with that, but it's also a technical school. So that's when we came up with this GoFame program and things like that to get a young guy or gal that wanted to be educated a little bit more but didn't want to take that path of going to 4 years and things they probably didn't think they'd ever use. They wanted to learn how to weld. They wanted to be an electrician. They wanted to be HVAC. And then give them some basic things that they do so they can write and speak intelligently. And that was the thought process behind it. I'm very proud of that.
Yeah, I mean, just from personal experience, I know a lot of people that did the early college program, and it saved a lot of people money, too.
Yep.
You know,
it was,
cost of education, higher education is outrageous.
Yeah, it's a, you're always talking about the president wanting to do away with college debt. Well, I think I ought to go to the colleges. And have, you know, because every time you do something like that, they end up raising their daggone tuition fees.
Yeah, it's become a competition.
Yeah, and, you know, they've built their little kingdom, not everywhere. I'm making generalizations here now. You know, built a kingdom around X number of dollars coming in. You know, and I think that every, you know, like Harvard and Yale and Columbia and some of them, you know, those Ivy League schools, Harvard's got a $5.2 billion
endowment,
you know. But they raise their tuition every year, you know. I'm thinking, and you know, I make this analogy a lot of times. I was in electrical engineering when I went to UK, and I'll guarantee you, I think my year at UK was $880.
Wow.
Three meals a day, room and board.
It's like 3 hours at UK now.
And I bet you the guy teaching the electrical slide rule course and not teaching it any different than the guy I had in 1969.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing that I think's a farce about higher education. That's why I'm so involved, I guess, with the community college. I think they get closer to what's happening. And granted, we need lawyers, doctors. We need all those professional people. But, you know, some of the debt that docs come out of medical school is just— You know, they'll make a good living, but it's still a huge. And that's why you have trouble recruiting them to smaller communities, because you can't pay the docs as much as they can pay at Cleveland Clinic or, you know, at Barnes or places like that. You know, you're limited on that. And so you got a list of 12 candidates, and, you know, you don't want really the bottom four, and you'd like to have the middle three,
yeah.
But you can't get to the 1, 2, and 3 because just from finances, and that's they got a debt to retire too.
Yeah, luckily, I mean, me and him want to go to law school, but people, you know, we always talk about the importance of higher education, and even if you don't go into a professional degree, at least you'll have these skills. And I mean, I think that there's some validity to that, but. I mean, I think people, if they genuinely have no idea what they want to do, I see no problem with going to a community college for 2 years.
And you'll find out if you can make it or not. I started off at UK for a year, and then I was in an accident and I had to lay out. And then I went to Memphis State, and then I went to Brescia. Then I ended up in Northwestern to get my prosthetics. And then I went to Harvard for a special scoliosis course. So I've had a taste of the big and the normal, and the teachers I had at Brescia, they taught me anatomy, physiology, biomechanics, kinesiology, normal human locomotion, just as good as the teachers did at Northwestern. So I think there's just such inequity when it comes to paying that tuition bill. You get a good place and you get good instructors and professors, and you'll do well wherever you came from, I think.
You don't have to always go to Harvard, you know. We have perfectly good colleges here.
Get indoctrinated instead of educated.
Yeah. Was that a thing when you were going to college, really, the indoctrination that was happening in school?
No.
That's brand new?
That's been about, yeah, it's newer.
There was probably still liberal teachers back then, but you didn't see what we're seeing now, you know, back then.
Yeah, I think there were a lot of liberal teachers, you know, but they weren't trying to indoctrinate you, you know. I didn't find that to be true, you know, but in when I went mine, as a certified prosthetist, I had both intellectual and hand skills I had to do, you know, because I had to build them, plus I had to figure out go into OR with the surgeon and talk anatomy and physiology, and if we do this here, what's going to happen? And did an internship down at St. Jude's and learned about osteogenic sarcoma and what the effects it had on kids, and ended up doing amputations at the hip, and knowing full well those children were probably going to die by the time they were 21, because you never really can get, you never really could get all of it out of them. And so I've seen all that, and I just think that as much, you know, what you're going to get out of it, what you put into it.
No. Yeah. So, do you have any other questions, John? My mom's from Owensboro. I'm an Army brat, so I've moved around a lot. Every time I come back to Owensboro, the riverfront seems to get bigger. What's the end goal with that? Like, what's that going to do for the community growing the riverfront?
Well, I don't know that. I don't know how much more can grow, to be honest with you. We got the convention center. We have a real, you know, it's one of the top one or two children's park in America. We're out of room for one thing, you know, not a whole lot more we can do.
Yeah.
But the crazy thing, it's all paid for. And so anything, you know, like we got to beat the death of those concrete trees. They hold up all the electrical and all the stuff inside there. And, you know, they were $1 million a piece, you know, but people don't realize that. But, you know, that's why we needed them. And I think it costs us about $1 million a year maintenance, keeping the surface that they put down there needs to be very power sprayed to really clean it off. So, and then, you know, we have to put extra police officers during Friday after five down there for all the activity. But it's created a safe place, I think, for children. Parents can sit close. They can see what's going on. And I go down there once a week just to see the kids running around having fun. And I'm thinking to myself, how many germs are they putting on all these things? <you know? laughs> But I don't see it. Just upkeep's going to be the main thing, and I don't see anything else.
Yeah,
getting down
that
there.
Park was so vital, because I grew up. I'm from Owensboro. I was raised, you know, born and raised, and I mean that park opened in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I do remember a time before the park, but just how much, you know, we have all these brand new hotels, tourism's exploded, you know. I know for Westland, that's how they attract out of state students, is showing us, you know, showing the waterfront, and that, so it's attracted, you know, quite a bit of people and brought money to our community for sure.
The fountains are really nice, and putting those lights on the bridge was a big deal when I did that. You know, I got a lot of headaches over that, but it actually was within a maybe $10,000, or the bridge costs more to build. The lights almost cost as much as it did to build the bridge in 1937. But I mean, it's a draw too. You know, you turn that thing on at night, and we've got it controlled. We got a little flicker, and we can.
Is it in your office? Do you just like press the button?
Assistant city manager, I call him up, and you know, we try and not do it specifically for one group, because you'd have to do it for all the groups. Mm. And there's some things that you don't want to support. I don't, and a lot of the community wouldn't. And so we have it's on a computer, and I think when Green River Distillery opened up and started revitalizing the bourbon industry in Owensboro, they wanted all green lights all night long. And so I said to Leland, our assistant city, he has the clicker. I said, can you just extemporaneously have green lights come on like once every 5 minutes or something while we're having this celebration up there at the convention center, you know?
And, that's funny.
Yeah, because, you know, there are groups that wouldn't be proper to make it one color or another. So, and you just open up Pandora's box, so that's why we haven't done it. And
you don't want to make it seem like you're, you know, there's people like to assume and people like to speculate. So, you know.
You know what assume means, don't you?
No.
That ass out of you and me. That's what it means. Yeah. And so we try and be pretty neutral on that and not be too specific. But, and quite honestly, one of the candidates running for mayor said that was the biggest waste of money that Owensboro's ever done. Who cares about lights on a bridge? And I'm going, yep, I don't believe I'm going to have to worry about her in the meeting, you know. So, yeah, I think it really adds something. I mean, you know, you come in from different parts of the area and either come across that. And granted, we have the nature, and but this, there's that bridge is 1937, I believe, and it's actually got three names.
Really?
It's the Glover Carey Bridge, it's the Owensboro Bridge, and it's the Blue Bridge.
I knew the first and third one. I didn't know the second one was an actual title for it.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Just like the sports.
I just always knew it as the Blue Bridge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what everybody calls it, the Blue Bridge.
Well, I think that wraps it up. We appreciate you coming on here and speaking with us.
Well, I hope I did what you needed, and I'm happy to be here, and I appreciate y'all taking the time to be concerned about what's going on in OBKY.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.